Joe Rogan used to be an actor himself, and because of this, he understands what Hollywood elites do to stay relevant, and how fake the entire industry and all the people within it really are. In fact, the whole reason he left the industry was because he could no longer stand the shallowness of it all. Nobody was real or authentic, and so given his history, he had no qualms about calling out actors and all of their BS.
Everybody who goes in there, they go into these auditions, and there was these people who were, like, air quotes, working actors, right? Yeah. They do a little, I was on Just Shoot Me for a scene. Yeah. You know, I had a nice episode on this. Those people, they develop this real slick way of talking. And they don't say, nice to meet you, because they might already met you. So they say, good to see you. Good to see you, Kyle. This way of doing it, I was recognizing it. The way they would talk, everyone was like super left-wing, super progressive. No one explored ideas. You just adopted whatever everybody else was going with and ran with it. Oh, yes, I agree. Hillary is so much more qualified. People would just say shit like that. It was really strange.
Take, for example, his most recent comments on two Marvel actors. In the last few years, Marvel has gone from being one of the most beloved franchises to a dumpster fire of PR scandals. And unfortunately for executives, the flames aren't going down anytime soon. On a recent episode of the Joe Rogan Experience, the four men briefly turned their focus to Marvel, more specifically the drama surrounding Captain America Brave New World. In the lead up to the film's release, like almost every Marvel film recently, was hit with disaster after disaster. From disappointing results at test screenings, expensive reshoots, fans questioning whether they were going to pay for a lecture or a fun action movie. Now Marvel might have won some fans back with Deadpool and Wolverine, but those couple of films could only shield the studio from so much. The eventual release of the trailer was meant to be the film's saving grace, and it somewhat worked. It sparked both confusion and tentative hope. It was a bit odd that a non-superpowered Sam Wilson was taking on a Hulk villain, but other than that, the trailer seemed okay. There was no sign of more virtue signaling, no multiversal nonsense, and Harrison Ford as president. Maybe Disney and Marvel had finally realized their lesson, that virtue signaling in their movies was always going to be disastrous. Maybe, just maybe, they were focused on telling a good story once again. But then disaster struck in the form of none other than Anthony Mackie. A few weeks before the film was released, Anthony was doing a promo in Rome when he commented that America shouldn't be one of the things that Captain America represents.
For me, Captain America represents a lot of different things, and I don't think the term, you know, America should be one of those representations. It's about a man who keeps his word, who has honor, dignity, and integrity, someone who is trustworthy and dependable.
He sounded almost disgusted by his own country, like America was a dirty word. Now, I'm not really sure the reaction he was expecting, but it probably wasn't in his silent room. You would have thought that someone would have moved to cut off his mic, but he just kept going on. Saying this at the same time that America shouldn't be one of the things Captain America represents made it feel like this was just a backhanded dig at Americans. And so, understandably, fans of Captain America weren't happy with what he was saying. Many just felt like he was completely dishonoring the character's history and origin, the whole point of the movie almost. As Captain America was designed to embody American values. He exuded everything good about the country, no matter its current political climate. I mean, the country could be in shambles, but Captain America would always be around as a symbol of what it was meant to be. He was a fictional hero people could look to in a time when the world was at its darkest, a symbol of hope and strength. He was designed to unite people and make them proud of their country, and be a beacon of hope to all other countries around the world. And now Marvel and Disney are apparently trying to scrape those links to what? Make the character more relatable, more socially acceptable in today's political climate? It all made no sense. If anything, these comments would ensure no one showed up to the movie, which is exactly what the Fight Companion episode showed, as Joe Rogan would comment on the absurdity of Mackie's words, sarcastically remarking that he wasn't their Captain America.
That guy's not my Captain America.
No, that's not
that guy's
my
a
Captain.
Pussy.
The whole situation was just yet another major PR crisis. However, Joe Rogan seemed more interested in why Mackie had felt urged to say what he had in the first place.
Isn't it weird that they feel like they have to say stuff like that to keep working?
It's
like,
weird. It's so
but
weird.
The movie studio goes,
this was a simple comment, but one that linked back to a deeper issue in Hollywood. No one is allowed to have differing opinions. The last place in America that always has to toe the line, that has to say whatever they're told to say no matter how ridiculous, is Hollywood.
I think whether we're talking about gender inequality, or racism, or queer rights, or indigenous rights or animal rights, we're talking about the fight against injustice.
Because if you don't, you'll just be fired, lose all your support, and never get hired for another major Hollywood project. In fact, there are unfortunately several examples of celebrities who were allegedly blacklisted over their political views. And yet many will go on to Joe Rogan to talk about this exact issue. People like Woody Harrelson, Matthew McConaughey, to name just a few. In fact, according to him, many celebrities thank him for his views. They fully believe in what he's saying, but have to completely pretend the contrary in public. So it's very possible that, as Rogan suggested, Mackie may have said what he did to keep his job. And it seems so far that Anthony Mackie may be one of the more palatable Hollywood actors. In fact, he was very open about why modern movies suck.
When you went to the movies, you went to go see the Stallone movie. You went to go see the Schwarzenegger movie. Now you go see X-Men. So the evolution of the superhero has meant the death of the movie star. And that's the fear now, because you're now making movies for 16-year-olds and China.
And generally on the whole, people find him somewhat relatable. He wasn't trying to push an agenda down people's throats or fight a societal war. He seems normally to just be himself, but his latest comments were completely out of nowhere, and probably as a direct result of Disney's influence. But whatever the reasoning behind these comments, Mackie did still make them. Now, he did try to clarify what he meant in a post made to Instagram later on. He started by stating that he was proud to be an American and get to play a character like Captain America, but he would also assure people that he had the most utmost respect for those who serve and have served the country. Furthermore, he emphasized that his character was the one he wanted everybody to relate to. But the damage was already completely done. And now we're seeing the effects of his comments in real time, and the movie has been a complete train wreck. But Anthony Mackie wasn't the only Marvel actor to do this. You know, Joe Rogan's known for his MMA fighting, being in extremely good shape and doing quite well health-wise at the tender age of 56-57. If you remember, he bounced back from COVID in like 2 or 3 days, so he definitely takes care of himself. And one of the supplements that he's mentioned and has talked about is NMN. Now, rather than me try to explain it, I'm just going to let the doctor that discovered this explain it. And then I'll tell you some of the other effects that he doesn't mention in the short clip.
About 20 years ago, Lenny Garanti and a team of us at MIT discovered a set of genes that controls aging in yeast cells, just brewer's yeast, what you find in beer and bread. And those genes are called sirtuins, and there are 7 of them in our bodies, 5 in yeast. And what they do is they protect all organisms on the planet, plants, bacteria, humans. So when you put more of these genes into a yeast cell or a mouse, they'll live longer, between 5 to 20% longer. And so we think that these genes are responsible for the effects of dieting and exercise.
With NMN, you get improved energy, weight management, endurance, strength, and anti-aging benefits. Personally, it's improved my skin. Many people on YouTube have taken it for years, sharing their blood tests and studies, and it's clear that users feel stronger, more energized, and overall just better. As men, we need to stay strong, sharp, and healthy because no one else would do it for us. And that's why I recommend Black Forest Supplements NMN. It increases NAD+, helping your body regain the vitality of your younger years, reducing wrinkles, joint pain, and that unwanted belly. Another key supplement is Revitrol, which pairs perfectly with MNN, and Black Forest offers both of these supplements. But MNN is the real game changer. It boosts NAD+ production, reigniting the strength, energy, and vitality you had at 16 or 18. Over time, aging takes its toll with wrinkles, joint pain, stubborn belly fat, but MNN helps reverse those effects, restoring what time has taken away. So check out Black Forest today, links are down below in the description, and I think you'll be pleasantly surprised with it. I know I am. In 2024, Dave Bautista decided to try his hand at politics, and it really wouldn't take long for his decision to backfire spectacularly. In a now viral post, he went on a rant about Trump, calling him weak while punching stuff and acting just super macho, almost just like a giant toddler.
Fellas, we gotta talk. A lot of men seem to think that Donald Trump is some kind of tough guy. He's not. I mean, look at him. He wears more makeup than Dolly Parton.
He was acting as though his body was more impressive than anything Trump had gone through. And not to say that Trump's some great guy, but it's just all the ridiculousness in Hollywood makes it so that it's so hard to support these people. I mean, just the fact that this Hollywood guy would even post a video meant to prove how much tougher he was than Trump without any self-awareness makes him look like an idiot. Not only did he make himself look like a fool, but Joe Rogan would openly laugh at him on his platform. He mocked his tough guy act and remarked that actors should just stay out of politics and stay in their lane.
You know who really fucked up? Bautista. He went all in against Trump. Yeah. Remember he did that video calling him a little bitch and all his different things?
What was that about?
Right. He did the whole thing where he's working out. You're a little bitch.
Yeah.
You're a little fat. You look like a bag of milk. Yeah. Fucking hit
just
the bag.
Bad jokes.
Doing working out. Yeah. Fucking looking jacked.
It's better to stay out of politics if you're an actor.
Hey.
And who couldn't agree with that? But if it wasn't already clear, Joe Rogan has no issue with calling actors out when they get too big for their boots. And he cares even less about calling out actors who are given leeway just because of their sexuality. Take Ezra Miller, for example. Now, 2020 wasn't a great year for anyone, but it was specifically bad for the Flash actor. Up to this point, Miller had earned a spot in Hollywood, featuring in not just one, but two major Warner Bros. Franchises, and he seemed to be at the top of the world, almost near unstoppable. But now that seems to have changed, all because a viral video exposed the actor for what he really was. Or rather, people thought it would all go to hell. In the video, Miller threatened a woman before grabbing her by the throat and throwing her to the ground. The person filming stopped to help before things could escalate, but there was no getting around what had just happened, especially when it was later confirmed that staff had escorted Miller off the premises. Interestingly, Miller faced no repercussions after the incident. No assault charges, no hearing, nothing. Life just continued as normal as if nothing ever happened. It was really odd, but most people left it alone. Considering what a year it was, most had more to worry about than an actor getting away with assaulting someone. The incident would have probably just been swept under the rug for someone else to dig up later in his career. However, Miller was just getting started. 2 years later, he would find himself in Hawaii. Any other person would have taken the opportunity to relax and enjoy the sights, but not Miller. He had to make a nuisance of himself again. Apparently between the 7th and 28th of March, police were called on him 10 times. 10. That's about once every 2 days. They were all petty incidences, but still. How does a person become such a nuisance that they get the police called on them 10 times in just a couple of weeks? And despite his apparent quest to torment as much of Hawaii as he could, Miller then managed to befriend a couple on the island. The couple invited him to stay at a hostel. There he would find himself in a karaoke bar. What harm could you cause in a karaoke bar? Maybe being a bit louder than necessary after one too many drinks? But Miller decided that the worst thing a person could do was sing Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper's Shallow. In fact, it was such an awful transgression that he had to physically assault them. Unsurprisingly, he was arrested, though he didn't seem to think it was justified, having the fame and money of Hollywood behind him. And the backing of the powers that be, he laid out to the officers that he was being unlawfully persecuted.
Unlawfully persecuted for a crime of no designation, disorderly conduct being something I am unguilty of. I claim my Fourth Amendment rights to not be searched and seized on no probable cause.
Furthermore, he felt that the officers had intentionally committed a hate crime by misgendering him.
I'm not a sir, I'm transgender, non-binary, kids never put me a sir, it's not a sir.
I was just trying to be respectful.
You failed to do that again. That is an act of intentional bigotry, and it is a technical hate crime according to U.S. federal law. Please call me they, them, theirs. You can use the term mix.
After his arrest, the couple he'd been staying with took the opportunity to make a report against him. Allegedly, he threatened to bury them before stealing the wife's passport and the husband's wallet, and they were granted a temporary restraining order against him but later dropped the allegations. At least recognizing that he could no longer stay in the area, Miller then headed for a volcano. That April, he was then arrested again, this time for second-degree assault, and apparently being asked to leave warranted chair being thrown at someone's head. However, once again, due to Miller's power and fame, faced no real consequences other than a small fine of $500. It was almost laughable. All of that and nothing more than a slap on the wrist for this millionaire. Not even his career had taken a hit. Over those 2 years, Miller was featured in 7 projects, 3 of which were DC related. And yet it turned out that all of this was just the tip of the iceberg for Miller. Things started really getting out of hand in June when a temporary order of protection was issued on behalf of Dakota Iron Eyes. The then 18-year-old girl had apparently been friends with Miller since 2016 when she was only 12. He flew her to London while filming Fantastic Beasts, and she apparently dropped out of school to follow him. But unfortunately, this isn't even the creepiest aspect of their relationship. The two believed their relationship would bring about a revolution and an apocalypse. Iron Eyes' parents were understandably concerned. According to them, Miller had groomed and manipulated their daughter. However, she denied all allegations and then defended Miller every chance she got. Their claims that she wasn't in control of her social media? Well, that would be rebuffed by a comment that she chose not to have a phone. Accusations that Ezra Miller had verbally abused her? Well, these were shut down by claims that the actor's comments were part of a queer dialogue and it was therefore homophobic to call it abuse. The actor actually started mocking the court's inability to locate him to serve the protection order. It was a bizarre situation and one the parents eventually gave up on. But unfortunately, she wasn't the only child Miller tried to befriend. That same month, a mother and her 12-year-old were granted a temporary harassment prevention. Miller had allegedly threatened the woman and acted improperly towards her child. According to the pair and a neighbor, he'd fixated on the child, hugging them and touching their hips. The mother further stated that Miller had taken an interest in her child because of their style and maturity. Apparently, he was convinced that her child was a mystical being, who would be lucky to have Ezra to guide and protect them. These aren't the words of a stable person, much less the words of someone leading a multi-billion dollar franchise. Given how quickly Johnny Depp was dropped from Warner Bros.' projects during the Amber Heard situation, you would think they'd just be as fast to drop Miller. Surely, after all the legal trouble and predatory behavior, Warner Bros. Would have the sense not to have someone like Miller leading one of their main films. Surely he would face some repercussions for his actions, but no. The studio went ahead with The Flash and allowed Ezra Miller to remain the face of one of the last DCEU projects. So why would Warner Bros. Not hesitate to fire Johnny Depp, one of the most famous actors in Hollywood, but somehow keep Ezra Miller despite everything? Well, Joe Rogan had a fascinating theory, and would expose it for what it really was.
Do you know the story with the movie The Flash?
I mean, I know Ezra Miller was like a controversial figure.
But to say it mildly.
Really?
To say it mildly.
Okay, hit me.
I mean, he must be so good in this fucking movie. I haven't seen the movie, but I heard it's really good.
Yeah,
but
he must kidnapped the person, right?
He's a freak, man.
Okay.
During that discussion, the comedian made a very interesting comment.
I mean, he's non-binary. He says he's a they-them, which gives him a lot of leeway. But with the stuff that he gets accused of, it's hard to imagine that they still release this movie with all these controversial charges against this guy. And I understand that, like, they spent some god-awful amount of money on the movie.
You know what's funny, too, is the Batgirl lady didn't do shit. They just canceled her movie.
And unfortunately, this isn't even unlikely. Had Miller been anyone else, he probably would have been cut from the project as soon as executives got a whiff of his disorderly conduct. But since he was non-binary, it was blind eyes. The hypocrisy would almost be mind-boggling if it weren't exactly what you'd expect from Hollywood. It's an industry that always contradicts itself constantly. And one of those things it's very contradictory on can be guns. Now, of course, many actors are very anti-gun. And that's not a problem if it's not hypocritical. Like in the case of Alec Baldwin. The 66-year-old actor has always been outspoken in his political views, just like everybody else in this list. But gun control was always a particularly sore spot for him, which on the surface really isn't that bad of a thing. In 2018, he tweeted about his distaste of the Second Amendment and called for the law to be rethought. That same year, he joined a group of celebrities dedicated to reducing the National Rifle Association's influence. He even got into a spat with Donald Trump over the issue on Twitter. He became a spokesperson for the issue. It's almost tragically ironic that a man who was so outspoken about gun violence would find himself unfortunately responsible for the very thing he was trying to prevent. As we all know, in 2021, Baldwin was rehearsing a scene in the movie Rust with what he believed to be a cold gun. He wanted to make sure he's performing a cross draw correctly and while doing so, discharged the weapon accidentally. Now in this case, the weapon should never have had a bullet inside it. In fact, the armorer had assured him that the gun was cold, so it going off shouldn't have done more than make a few people jump. But unfortunately, the prop team neglected to check whether the rounds they were using were live. And arguably, there should never have been any need to check. After all, who'd bring live ammo to a set where actors were constantly aiming guns at each other? Tragically, when Baldwin fired the gun, it took the life of the cinematographer for the movie. And the director was also hit, but the injury wasn't fatal. Understandably, Baldwin was devastated by this.
I have no idea. I take that back. I have some ideas, but that's not for me to say. Someone put a live bullet in a gun. A bullet that wasn't even supposed to be on the property. And this is the thing I hope that the sheriff's department doesn't give up on, that they follow this to the ends of the earth. Where did that bullet come from? Somebody brought live rounds, plural, onto the set of the film. And one of them ended up in that gun. I've spoken to the sheriff's department multiple times. I don't have anything to hide, you know what I mean?
And it was this incident that would spark his passion for taking away the Second Amendment, which is understandable, but the way he would go about this would bring a lot of criticism. During his quest to right his wrongs post-shooting, he would share a screenshot of a viral tweet regarding shootings in the UK. According to the tweet, tighter gun control legislation in the UK had led to zero school shootings. He then reposted this to Instagram, but people weren't too happy about the post, especially because many of his audience were American. and many more of these people found it interesting that the man responsible for an unfortunate accident with a gun was now calling for more gun control. Now, on the surface, his situation does make sense, but people argue that tighter gun control wouldn't have actually protected the cinematographer, as this was a freak accident that could only be blamed on the people who didn't do their jobs properly, not Americans' rights to bear arms. And all Joe Rogan would do was laugh at the irony of all of this.
And by the way, congrats to Alec Baldwin. That just got ruled an accident.
It did?
It did.
When?
Recently.
I thought they said that he had to have pulled the trigger.
He did. Accidentally.
But he lied and he said he didn't pull the trigger.
People get nervous.
Taron Butler from Taron Tactical.
Yeah.
What does this say here? Medical investigator rules Baldwin set shooting an accident. Well, of course. He's not trying to kill that lady in front
right.
of everybody. I don't understand why they're saying, but that doesn't mean he wasn't negligible. Just because it was an accident.
What did the guy from Taron Tactical say?
It's impossible for that gun to shoot. He showed me the gun. I have
right.
a video of it. I was like, I don't want to start trouble and
right.
release this. But in the video, he has the gun. Not the actual gun, but the same model gun.
Yeah.
And he's showing how the action on this works. And he's like, it's not possible for the hammer to go forward and just accidentally fire. And he like cocks it back
yeah.
and shows how it works. He's like, you have to engage the trigger.
During a discussion with a popular gun enthusiast, Rogan pointed out Hollywood's hypocrisy with guns. He remarked that everyone was anti-gun until they were wielding one in front of a camera. Then guns were the heroes of the film and painted it in a positive light. If actors were actually anti-gun, they'd stop accepting roles that paint them in a positive light. Joe Rogan's point being, why would Baldwin choose to direct and act in a film like Rust if he was so against gun violence? Well, the answer is probably before the accident, he didn't really care about the issue as much as he seemed to. And more so now with his latest experience, Baldwin is arguably more driven by trauma than anything else. Unlike Meghan Markle, who seems to be driven more by narcissism than anything else. Just like her indirect jabs at Joe Rogan about misinformation to score brownie points. Now, of course, Joe Rogan, like everybody else, is no stranger to the goings-ons of Meghan Markle. When she and her husband left the royal family, he would go viral for imitating the Queen and referring to her as an American hussy.
It's that little American hussies he's hooked up with. She's gone to turn him into a Kardashian.
Since then, he's occasionally commented on the couple's activities, but never really went out of his way to make enemies with them. He just let them be. He's even stated that they could do relatively well for themselves if they endorse makeup line sneakers and watches.
They're already yeah. so popular, all they need to do is start endorsing fucking makeup lines and sneakers and watches and shit. Next thing you know, Jed's a millionaire.
As much as he was taking the piss, he wasn't specifically wishing them ill will. Meghan Markle, on the other hand, made a point of going after Rogan. In 2022, Meghan Markle decided to follow in the footsteps of numerous celebrities and start a podcast. As soon as she got out the royal family, she would sign a deal with Spotify, and her fans couldn't wait to see what she'd come up with. However, before her first episode was even published, Meghan Markle had to make a statement. While she had already signed the deal, she was now concerned that the music platform was allowing the spreading of disinformation. She brought up her non-profit and how it worked to address the real-time global misinformation crisis. She then finished this with the hope that Spotify would change to help address the public health crisis. The statement came off very holier than thou, and was right at the time when Joe Rogan was being cancelled by the mainstream media, with all the pressure of the establishment trying to discredit Joe Rogan and take him off Spotify. And while she didn't specifically mention Joe Rogan by name, it was a clear jab at the comedian at the exact same time this cancellation was happening, and he wasn't going to take these statements lying down. He would be quick to defend his podcast, commenting that he was just having interesting conversations.
I wanted to make this video, first of all, because I think there's a lot of people that have a distorted perception of what I do, maybe based on sound bites or based on headlines of articles that are disparaging. The podcast has been accused of spreading dangerous misinformation, specifically about two episodes. I do not know if they're right. I don't know, because I'm not a doctor, I'm not a scientist. I'm just a person who sits down and talks to people and has conversations with them. Do I get things wrong? Absolutely, I get things wrong, but I try to correct them. Whenever I get something wrong, I try to correct it because I'm interested in telling the truth. I'm interested in finding out what the truth is. And I'm interested in having interesting conversations with people that have differing opinions.
Interestingly, when Spotify agreed to add COVID content advisory labels, Rogan was in full support of the decision. And yet just by being himself and having conversations with people unfiltered, he managed to expose the cattier side of Meghan Markle. But his real smackdown came after she ended her podcast. When the first episode of Meghan Markle's podcast eventually aired, it beat the Joe Rogan Experience for the number one spot in Spotify. This was a major triumph for Meghan Markle. Not only was she talking to powerful women, but she had surpassed the most popular podcaster in the world. However, that victory became bitter when the podcast was cancelled just after 12 episodes. What could have been a years-long project lasted only a few months, and Joe Rogan was more than happy to theorize why.
That's why a lot of these celebrities that start these things, they can't keep up. They bail. You know, like the Meghan Markles and the fucking... I guess she's doing it now, but Prince Harry was doing one for a while, and Bruce Springsteen and Obama were doing one for a while.
Yeah, that was wild.
Terrible.
Like, guys, you don't got to do this. Please, I'm begging you to stop. Is there a Patreon that makes you stop?
You just can't keep faking it. It's too hard.
Which is, I think, also why shows like this work, because you can only pretend for, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
you get a sense of what the person's like.
According to him, celebrities who start podcasts are quick to bail because they can't keep up. Quote, listeners get a sense of what a person is like after a while. And that's very dangerous for celebrities, who've created a fake, phony image of themselves to appease their audience.